So, Lesbiana, which I suppose was her, was the filmmaker's made up name for like our country or whatever. So, a film about lesbian separatists. In the film, there were these communities that had physical existence, and I suppose some of them are still going strong, though the women in them are quite old, actually. But, like, where else is that? Is separatism an ideal for many feminists now? Lesbian separatism?
I don't think for young women, not.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Although I have met some young women in Eastern Europe, for example, who aspire to that possibility. For them, that was never possible in the 70s and 80s, and so they see it as this, in inverted commas, golden age that they missed, and they wish that they could create something like that. And there's this funny group, Fen Women?
Fen Women.
Who are creating a women's culture in, is it Hungary?
Oh.
So I think there's a way in which the that sense of can you separate yourself in a way that frees an imagination. I was very taken by that woman who said that you could own yourself.
Mm.
That there's something about women owning themselves and whatever freedom that then gives them to do whatever it is that they want to do.
Is that the same woman who said that she didn't think lesbianism was about sex?
Was her definition of a lesbian, wasn't it? A woman who owned herself. And actually, maybe that is the difference, because it seems to me when I talk to young women that the definition of a lesbian is very much to do with same-sex desire, and it goes with, they're saying, you know, it's LGBT, you know, it's this concatenation. It's not different from being a gay man, from being a bisexual. It is a sexual identity. And so I think they wouldn't see the sense in what the women whose lives are documented, whose ideas are documented in Lesbiana. I'm not sure that they would see it the same way. That isn't what lesbian identity seems to be for them, if they are feminists.
Yeah, but if you can now do a degree in queer studies, the whole question of whether you even have a lesbian identity at all is up for question. And the idea that you would define yourself as a separatist makes no political sense within that framework, whereas I see women's studies in the sense that we understood it as being very like separatism. It was a strategy that was necessary until such time, if ever, feminism reached its goals, rather than an end in itself. And I think one of the women on the film actually said that. It was a strategy.
Yeah.
Mm.
In the same way as women's...
Well, she said that had been a division, didn't she? That there were women like her who wanted to, you know, who saw it as a temporary measure, if you like, and others who saw it as a kind of eternal ideal.
At the same time, that didn't mean that saying it was a political strategy meant that it wasn't a wholly lived experience, which had unexpected consequences in terms of your life as a whole.
I wonder if there's maybe less perceived need for separatism because women have more, or can have more of an identity outside of relations with men. So when they were talking about kind of being married, and basically if you weren't married,
you couldn't do anything.
You couldn't do anything on your own. You were really, really limited. And I wonder if maybe maybe we shouldn't see it as a positive sign that there are more possibilities for women than there were, and therefore maybe not necessarily the same impetus towards that.
Hmm. And were we separatists? I mean, I'm thinking about myself. I suppose I was a separatist. Not only did I believe that the feminist movement should be autonomous in the sense that it should be about women organising and men should be excluded, and I still think that, but I actually did think that we were at some point going to have a revolution and put them all up against a wall and shoot them. I mean, I didn't think it for very long, but there was a moment, and that moment isn't now, is it? It's.
I don't think I thought that, but I definitely had this sense of the possibility of making them irrelevant.
Yeah.
Irrelevant to my life, to my thinking, to my being.
Mm.
And that was really a powerful possibility that you could make this group that had so dominated and so controlled your possibilities, to make them irrelevant to your everyday life, was actually really exciting, that you might be able to do that. Whether we did is a different question.
But we used to take it to much more doctrinaire extremes. Like right now, I really can't find it in me to care very much if the person who comes to unblock my pipes is a man or a woman, say, or, you know, I might have a feeling if I've got the choice, I'd give a woman the business. But it wouldn't be like I'm not having that male energy in my house, whereas once there was a community of women who spoke in that way. And it wasn't quite, you didn't think these people are just entirely mad or on the absolute outer fringes of normality for feminists. They were, that was quite a normal view in feminism.
But I think that within separatism there was as much difference as there was within feminism or within amongst women. You know, that separatists were as different as a group of air hostesses or a group of women of any occupation. And the problem now, looking at it retrospectively, is that they're seen as a kind of homogenous group who are either kind of like idealists, you know, who basically are completely underestimated, who have this extraordinary creative and political energy and were extremely radical, and who are seen alternatively as just being a mad bunch of kind of goddess worshipping lunatics who call themselves buckwheat and sage. And who were displaced.
Which some of them were, always.
Yes, but the perception is they were displaced by the real radicals, the sexual radicals of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the women in the film says, our movement never reached any maturity. You know, it stayed young, and we didn't actually develop that. And I just think that we were all of us to some degree, or other in the 70s, lesbian feminists were separatists to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But on a spectrum that was huge.
And I think that still exists. And that's a bit where I would disagree with her about maturity or not. Because I think there's still, I would use this word, wouldn't I? But there's a continuum of it. And lots of lesbians, lots of feminists spend most of their time with women and still prioritise women in their lives. But they don't have a problem if the plumber or the central heating engineer is man anymore. But there was a whole other side to that, which, being in refuge in the 70s, that principle actually made us have to do things that none of us knew how to do.
Yeah.
So we had to learn how to do those things. We had to learn how to keep the books. We had to learn how to mend a washer on a tap. We had to, and actually doing that in front of the women who came there and the children was also part of the politics of what we were doing. It was a politics of possibilities that we'd not had, and we wanted others to have them.
Yeah, no, you could see that in the archive footage in the film, in the documentary, couldn't you? That means people were up there, like, mending the roof, or women were up there mending the roof. And yeah, those were the days, but I was just shit at all of that.
Well, one of the things I thought was quite interesting was that one of the black women in the film said that separatism was seen as a kind of privileged white woman's kind of, like, almost like Marie Antoinette's toy farm, you know, that they were just playing at this and they could afford to do that. But in the actual discussion that followed from the film, the director, she's called Myriam Fougère, said that...
So you went to a screening that the director attended?
She was on the panel discussion after the screening, and she said that basically they had no money And that what it meant was that a lot of them had to continue to go back to their ordinary life to earn money and then come back into that world. They weren't living there permanently, and even those who did only ever did it for a few years at a time because financially it was completely unsustainable. But within that framework, they learnt, as Debbie was saying, all sorts of extraordinary skills to be self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
And that was extraordinarily empowering.
Mm. So did she say why she had decided to make the film, like what had inspired her to do it now?
No, I don't think so, except insofar as I think she felt it was an important contribution to women's history and the history of feminism, and that it was an area much neglected and much misrepresented, which is why she felt it was important.
Much misrepresented. I mean, I suppose I'm if I think about it, you know, quickly, I feel it's not represented at all, other than that it's misrepresented. It's like it's a thing you never hear about. You know, sort of histories of feminism are all about, you know, the women who threw their underwear into a trash can and then they became, well, essentially kind of liberal heterosexual feminists. And you don't hear too much about lesbian suffragettes.
Well, I think you don't hear it because basically what's there to say? They're just kind of barking mad to think you could live that way without, you know, without men. And I think in a way it's almost worse because they're dismissed. Why bother talking about that? Because it's clearly not possible and not realistic. I think that's
and actually, you know, this is the beginnings of ecofeminism, all sorts of things that actually are now quite important and validated actually began with those
women. Well, Greenham Common is another rather more mainstreamed example, I think.
They weren't lesbian separatists, were they? They were separatists on some other basis. But
that idea of self-sufficiency and of building houses that worked for the people who lived in them, but also which recycled and all of those women living on those women's lands actually did that in the 70s.
Mm. But then, you know, it didn't say much about some of the reasons those things fell apart. I mean, there was one comment, wasn't there, where somebody said, you know, women are damaged by patriarchy, and so you get a lot of damaged, very needy women, you know, lesbian or otherwise. And I remember someone telling me, someone I knew in Sweden who had been involved in Kvinnoland, the Scandinavian kind of separatist community that was built on land that wasn't being used for anything else. And that really broke apart because the proportion of people with, you know, of women with really serious needs for support and serious problems, mental health problems and that kind of thing, they just couldn't sustain it. You know, the proportion of them to people who could give that support was just too high. And I think that has always been a bit of a problem with when people set up communities. Of course, not all separatists were in communities, as she said in the film, some of these places are more like neighborhoods. And you know, there's an anthropologist in Manchester called Sarah Green who wrote an anthropology of lesbian separatists living in London, really kind of in Hackney and so on, in the 80s. Urban Amazons is a very good study of that, I think, but they weren't trying to have a commune.
But another thing I think that was, if not glossed over, then certainly played down in the film, was the political kind of differences between women that made constructive kind of community building really difficult. Somebody says at one point that she learnt to be impeccable because otherwise...
Because you were always being shot down about what did you say about disability or about, you know...
So during the era of kind of identity politics at its most extreme, there were obviously kind of issues that actually prevented them from cohering as a community at that point. And I don't blame the film for not articulating those differences and conflicts more strongly, because it depends really who your audience was, and that's one of the things I wasn't entirely clear about in relation to the film.
Yes, was she documenting it sort of for posterity, in the sense of anyone who might ever want to know about that, or was it really for the community from which the people in the film came? I think it was quite hard to tell. And then the problem that you allude to hasn't really gone away, has it? Because it's just expressed in new ways now. I mean, I think that wanting to be impeccable is one of the reasons why the younger women activists that I know through working at a university couldn't conceive of being separatist, even in their political organisation, because that would shut out certain categories of people that they think it's important to work with. They really don't have that sense of it's important for women to work together as women at all. And it's one thing, they're quite radical in some ways, but in that particular way, it always surprises me. They don't have any sense of why that would be important or why it would help them. Although they complain about the way the things that happen in mixed political groupings, which are really exactly the same as we remember. You know, the men kind of take all the leadership roles and so on. But it seems very strange in sort of sexual politics type of groupings. But they're trying to be impeccable. They see other minorities as more oppressed than them.
Mm-hmm. And actually that was what was so radical, was actually saying, no, we're important enough mm-hmm. to claim these spaces, to make these spaces, to create these spaces. And that, I do think that was revolutionary that women did that.
Mm.
And to make other people feel uncomfortable. That wasn't the intention, but to mm-hmm. live with the consequences of that, which is what a lot of younger women are now not prepared to do.
But that, I think, isn't that the thing of wanting to be impeccable, is that you never have to feel uncomfortable. If you're impeccable, you never have to feel uncomfortable. And I've been thinking about this a lot recently, that actually I learn the most politically when I pay attention to the fact that I feel uncomfortable and why. Why do I feel uncomfortable? Rather than being defensive, just taking a step backwards and thinking, what is it that's making me feel uncomfortable?
But I was actually talking about making other people feel uncomfortable, you know, because at a very mild level in terms of feminist separatism, I remember having to justify to men when I first mm-hmm. got involved with feminism why they weren't invited things, and they would say, but they don't know me, how can they not want me? And you would have to go through this whole process of explaining that it wasn't about them as individuals, it was about men's group and so on, and go through that whole argument. But actually a lot of women don't want to do that, regardless of whether we're talking about men or whether we're talking about any group, that there's a real anxiety about excluding people rather than seeing autonomous organising as being about organising. It's not about excluding people, it's about you choosing a space in which you can actually develop arguments, empower yourselves, all of the things we know. So in a way, separatism for me is like an extension of consciousness raising, and therefore in one sense historically located in that period and impossible to retrieve. But at another level, there is something about women's autonomous organising or any autonomous organising that I think is absolutely essentially connected to radical political endeavour, until such time as that movement has achieved what it set out to do. And at that point, you don't need it anymore, whether it's women's studies or women's lands or women's presses or, you know, mm-hmm. any of those things. But until such time as, you know, you have achieved those goals, we need those things, whether we call them separatist or not.